Hi everyone, it's Matt. My name is the real Slim Shady. Hi everyone, my name is Matt Stranick, Dr. Matt, and I'm here for episode 3.0 of the Ed Non-Tech Podcast with my esteemed friend and colleague, Dr. Doug, who's over on the East Coast. I'm coming to you live-ish, somewhat live, somewhat synchronously, as it were. So coming to you from Kamloops, British Columbia, Doug, you were in Charlottetown, right? That's you're actually within the city proper, or?
Nope, I can see the ocean. I'm a few minutes outside.
Okay, so when you refer just to your community or your area, if you were to run into somebody, one of your friends, say, and they're like, well, where are you? What part of the island or what part of town? What would you tell them?
It depends on the friend. Some friends I'd say, oh, yeah, I'm in Nova Scotia still.
And oh.
Other friends I'd say I'm in Kinuko.
I got some of those friends. It's like, I hope you are well and not in jail or otherwise. Yeah. Okay.
So Kinuko is where I am.
Kenu Cove. Okay, that's fine. You don't need to go any further. I'm not going to ask you your postal code.
Seven different postal codes so far in 5 months.
Man, I'd be like writing myself post-it notes, or I'd be having annoying memos on my phone if I had to keep track of that many. That's well done, my friend.
I'm on a Mac, and there's a little app called Stickies. And it's been around since the 80s. And so you leave electronic post-it notes on your desktop. And
that's a highly digital presentation of what is ostensibly an analog format.
Yeah.
I like it. I like the little thing in Microsoft Word where, it looks like a, floppy disk from the 90s. Press on it. I like those, they're anachronisms, sort of,
If I had known, I have one in the room right there. I have a couple of floppies that aren't so floppy from the 90s.
Some floppies that aren't, some perfectly fine, firm.
Not floppies.
Unfloppies. Floppy, yeah. the floppylessness overruns the dwelling.
Or the non-floppy. The computer non-floppy.
Doug, I had so much hope for the beginning of this. Let's steer it back. I will try and steer it back. I'm totally the cause of the diversion.
Could you do the acknowledgments?
Absolutely. So I guess just one thing that's important for this podcast, as opposed to kind of silly, is that Doug sort of did some investigating. And I'll let him speak to this, but he came up with a preferred term or a more specified sort of way of speaking to, the indigenous territory which he occupies. And I placed some resources for this in the show notes. I'll just again quickly say that I am, as always, immensely grateful and honored even to live and to be able to, practice to do what I do. Here in Shikwetmik Ulu, the home and the indeed ancestral lands of the Shikwetmik Nation. And again, as before, we're just trying to speak, holistically within this podcast. So, I think it's important that our acknowledgments grow and that our understanding of what it means to be, an uninvited colonial, person in these lands, so it's again, you don't want to just sort of put a stamp on it and congratulate yourself. Okay. So anyway, Doug, you have much more, put much more thought into this than I've given you credit for. So maybe I'll just turn it over to you.
Thanks for that. So I'm on Epiquit, which is Prince Edward Island now, within the Mi'kma'ki, the ancestral unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. And I apologize if I butchered that pronunciation, but that's what I found when I looked up how to pronounce it, because names are important, and people's names are especially important, and I wouldn't want somebody butchering my name. So I apologize if that's if I butchered that.
I'm sorry, Doug. I don't want to barge into your intro because I know they have more to say. But I mean, just having done a great number of name butchering in my time, you know, in Qatar, I was there for 6.5 years, in Korea, you know, just even, you know, as a person in 21st century Canada, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, don't be so sensitive about it. It's like, yeah, people should be friggin' sensitive about it. This stuff does matter a lot. Again, I appreciate Doug kind of repping, I guess, from the East Coast, because Mi'kmaq territory, you know, is throughout Eastern Canada, Eastern United States. And, you know, where Doug is going with this, I believe, is that he's sort of differentiating now his particular area within the larger Mi'kmaq, you know, culture and nation, group of nations, you know, as it were. Again, apologies for not using the terminology. And I'll just throw this out here once more. And then I'll really be done with it. There's a couple of excellent resources which I found today. One of them I don't use it as much as I should. Firstvoices.com. Doug, I don't know if you're aware of it, but it's a really comprehensive language preservation effort by something like 70 indigenous, I believe they're all Canadian languages that are, you know, that are still existing, and it's to promote usage and language survival. I've got a link to that in the show notes. And the other is that in terms of actually your particular area, who you identified and who I've already forgotten the name of, man. But there's an excellent website about, you know, devoted specifically by and for that, you know, group, apparently within Mi'kmaq, you know, unceded territory in Prince Edward Island. So again, those resources are in the show notes. I will totally stop talking and allow Doug to finish up his intro and or respond.
Sure. Okay. We're only 9 minutes in, and I'm Dr. Doug Reed
from the esteemed Dr. Doug Reed.
Okay. I'll take that too. I'm actually Baron the Doctor Doug Reed. I have a patent of nobility from Sealand, that little micronation off the coast of the UK.
Are you actually serious, man?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know what to make of this information, but I'm deeply impressed.
It's that I'm ridiculous sometimes.
And I'll tell you what.
I have credit cards.
And I'll tell you what. Speaking of me learning things later on in my life, Doug had the awesome concept for the show, lifelong learning and technology. So there we go. And I think actually, if you're talking about lifelong learning, you are inherently and implicitly talking about terminology, conceptual clarity, all of these things that we've sort of gotten at the first, you know, episode, 2.5 episodes in. I think what we have now is maybe a good basis for that kind of discussion. You've started up a document with some further topics and titles and things. So maybe, Doug, you just speak to, you know, why this topic and what was significant about it for you to suggest it today.
The big picture is it matters. It matters to me. And I know it matters to other people. When the European Union has a commission and comes up with, here's why lifelong learning matters, then it's important to a whole pile of people. And what I found is it's now branching off in different ways. And some of the ways I don't care for as much as others. Like there's one way that it's become about economics. It's about, this will help your earning potential. And it's like, I don't care about that at all. Like Matt, I am betting now this year you have learned a lot about football that you may not have known 6 months ago.
If I may, I'm learning all kinds of stuff about the culture of football. And I'll tell you again, as somebody who really kind of eschewed sports when I was a younger person, first of all, again, I'm so amazed and respectful of my kids for embracing these things as much as they have. But what I'm really learning about, and what some of my friends who are more keyed into it, John Bowie, hockey, I'm talking to you in Fredericton, my dude, he's my best friend since I was five. And what he's been telling me his whole life in various ways is that sport really is about culture first. And if it's a healthy, vibrant culture, like we're lucky to have with the sports my kids are involved in, then, you know, it all sort of zooms around and hones in on, you know, the game, the phenomena, the moment. I, after this, Doug, I'm going to go sit in the snowing cold and dark at Tournament Capital Center to watch one kid play football. And then the other kid is going to be on the field directly adjacent, doing football practice for Pee Wee. I didn't expect this kind of thing when I was younger, but you're right. I'm learning all kinds about the culture. You know, I still can't tell you how many downs are necessary to, you know, get the thing. I can't tell you any of that. Okay, swell. One more thing I know about football.
Three okay. is the answer.
So we're talking metaphors and ed tech. So I think that whole segue there about my kids and their sports was only slightly off track. So thank you for the opportunity to highlight, bud.
And I don't think it was off track at all. Because if you take a look at lifelong learning and technology, you're learning a bunch, but look how you're learning it, right? Like how much organization is happening through like electronic media. If you don't have a Facebook account, how do you get to Facebook to see what's going on there? Or is it an online database? Or do you have to do it through some other social media or go to that webpage or the technology's there and you got to use it. There's no option. Is that a fair comment with what's going on?
I do think that's a fair comment. It's exclusionary, and it's concerning how exclusionary it is. But I got to tell you, in as much as the culture of sport goes, what I would say is that the advantages of having something like Team Snap, you know, or one of these scheduling and messaging apps, make it so the conveniences for me, you know, outweigh the, costs. Yeah. And I guess that's because I'm a privileged middle-class dude with, you know, pretty good amount of resources on my credit card, which, you know, but I mean, I know ultimately this convenience is directly correlated to privilege. Okay, so if we're talking about naming and we're talking about what we want to call things, I think, you know, speaking to it through an equity lens, and equity includes economic and I would say even technological literacy, really, you know, access to technology and the requisite skills to use it. I mean, I think you'll agree, Doug, the phone is completely useless. It's just a friggin' rock, a highly expensive rock made of composite metals from Africa, which, you know, if you don't really know what the function of it is, or don't have the literacy to use it, then, I mean, how is it different even than a rock, right?
Yeah. And one of the references I looked up, the Eon and Malberg, the 2021, okay. Lifelong Learning in the Internet, who benefits from online learning? And they talked about what you just said. Right? It's for some reason, the powers that be have focused everything on the individual. It's your responsibility to figure out how to use technology. It's your responsibility to find the money to buy that cell phone or buy the tablet or whatever you're using. And it's all about your responsibility. The larger society has said, no, that's not working. And the structural inequities are still there. It's the digital divide all over again.
Can I speak to that? Thank you. The digital divide and structural inequities. There are First Nations in Canada that don't even have like drinkable, you know, potable water. Okay, they live under a permanent water advisory. There's like asbestos in some of these, you know, 1950s and 60s buildings. And, you know, these are places where wireless, you know, may not even be an option. You may be dealing with dial-up internet, or you may not have any. And again, the divide as such, I mean, this is an example I think that's meaningful in our country, rural and I would say, you know, indigenous communities are, you know, being excluded disproportionately because of the things that you just mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, it's how do we do it? Because right now it's not working. And like the research was awesome. The research says what they did in the past didn't work. And they haven't changed their focus, so they're just doing more of the same stuff they did in the past. And guess what? It's not working again. Well, this is not rocket science or rocket surgery or anything complicated.
So let's dial this into something personal here then. I mean, what was, I guess, was there a triggering moment? I mean, and I hate that word triggering. It's been, you know, abused by a lot of people. But, you know, what was the motivating incident, if there was one, or the motivating cognitive moment for you that got you onto this topic for today?
20 years ago, I was doing my master's at University of Calgary.
Okay.
And I got a chance to teach.
Awesome.
Online. But it wasn't online. It was supposed to be online, but it was on the radio. And I taught people in the Yukon. And it was, there's a whole bunch of educators. And these little communities in the Yukon are tiny, right? Like, and so they would all come together. And I taught people in six different communities. And the radio was what they had. They didn't have internet that was good enough. They had internet, but it wasn't great. That was 20 years ago. So I literally sat in a little room, put the headphones on, and there was a person on the other side of the window from me, and he plugged in the cords like you see from the 1950s movies, where, yo, you want that radio? Okay, or that person on the line here, let's plug this in and take that out. And I was like, if I wasn't here doing this, if we didn't have this radio, these people wouldn't learn what they needed to learn to help their students. And that changed my life. And part of the life changing for me has been after I finished my PhD. I promised myself I would never take another course that had an exam because I hate exams. But in the last few years, I've become more of a lifelong learner because I'm an expert learner. People have told me that repeatedly. I learn stuff. Like, that's why I'm a meditation instructor. That's why I have my license to fly drones or quadcopters or whatever. I have all these licenses. I'm a certified yoga instructor.
What's the opposite of that? Like, the 100% opposite. Like, the person who people are like, dude, you don't seem to learn much. And when you do, it takes a long time. I mean, that's me. So I just like now, you know, anything we can sort of do to add to the dynamic within the show. We've just sort of got Doug who, you know, performs and, you know, has the ability to kind of take these on, these tasks, and sort of move through the steps, you know, in such a fashion that he accomplishes that with great efficiency. Whereas me, my process, anybody who's ever worked on a team with me will tell you, is not always efficient at all. It's very messy. It's very iterative. And it, you know, it's the kind of in a very, you know, it's intelligence of a different sort than what Doug is describing.
Do you want to know? I have a great metaphor for this. Okay. It's like when you look for research funding. Like, I hate doing that too. I hate begging people for money. That's not my thing. And the research funding bodies, a lot of people now, what they seem to be doing is they do the research and then go get the funding for it based on their preliminary, but really the research, because they already know where the answers are. And I read a thing years ago. This person described it as it's like whales. Whales know where the food is. That's why whales migrate to where they migrate. They know where the food is. And us doing research and the way you just described your learning is the fractal random walk of ants. Ants walk in a certain fractal way to try to find food because they don't know where it is. And that's what you're doing. You're finding your way. And so it's just a different way to do things.
Okay.
So I think that's awesome.
Well, this is not going to translate well on my thing. I've definitely added these statements, Doug, to the show notes. Okay. Whales find food. Okay. That's.
Yeah. Whales know where the food already is. They don't have to find it. They know where it's going to be.
As a West Coast resident, dude, I appreciate that. I know we got whales and, you know, the Bay of Fundy and whatnot. But okay, and the other phrase here that's jumping out at me now, the fractal walk of ants.
The fractal random walk.
The fractal random. Okay,
and that's the important word there.
And it's very unlike me to leave out a word like random, because that's a word that I tend to gravitate towards as mm-hmm. per, you know,
but science. you just described how some lifelong learners do things. And it's like for me, I needed to, like, when I was a teacher, right, sometimes it takes like 9 months for that child to learn 3 times 3. Right? There's not a lot of joy in my life when it takes 9 months for that kid to figure something out that everybody else figured out in October. So I started woodworking, and I make a lot of firewood, right? I start trying to make something. I end up with firewood, and eventually I end up with something like a chair or a table or entertainment unit, whatever. I went online, and part of what I wanted to talk about was the different types of resources out there, the different types of technology. Most of the people that do online, like how to do woodworking, they're woodworkers. That's what they are.
Dude, you are doing a fantastic job of steering us on topic. And I will just say here that what you're referring to, you know, these videos or these, you know, like, my kids, anytime they want to know how to do something, they just find the appropriate YouTube video. So, I mean, it's like this, what do you call it? Just-in-time resources. That's a phrase from instructional design, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And when I was doing my, you know, doctoral on study on these MOOCs, right, these massive so-called open courses, which, you know, went in and out of vogue, and people have said that they're dead, except maybe they're not, and this and that. But I'm not even going there. What I'm just going to say is that a lot of those courses, just to speak to your point on who takes them, right? You're talking about woodworkers take the woodworking courses, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the people who took these MOOCs, by and large, and, you know, through what they told me in surveys and other formats, is that people who are educated take those courses. People who already have, like, you know, a BA. It's like, you know, educated people who are, you know, knowledgeable about learning in general. So I think, you know, to take it back a little bit more, what I think we could sort of make a suggestion towards is more digital literacy within K-12 curriculum broadly, and even like the equivalent of that within colleges and universities. Like, you must show X, Y, or Z competencies in this, you know, I hate these forced, you know, classes just as much as anybody, but like, you shouldn't be able to do it unless you can prove your access and knowledge of these tools, because otherwise you'll be at a disadvantage. There should be, mm-hmm. you know, honestly, it should just be part of the enrollment process. It should be like, demonstrate your access to these resources and capability of using them. And then, you know, if you don't want to keep people from being out of it, you can just say, okay, your summer assignment before you can actually take any full credit classes is, go through these modules or, whatever. So
that structure already exists. We do it to students coming from countries that don't speak English as their first language. You have to take that. You have to take that English as a second language TESOL exam. And if you don't score X, you can't come in. So we already have that structure in place for other stuff.
Oh, so in terms of delivering a digital literacy thing, in a similar kind of format or whatnot.
We could. We already have the structure and everybody accepts it. The infrastructure is in place for that.
We don't want to do it. It's like nobody wants to put a barrier in front of anything. What I would argue is it fair to say this curriculum is open to you? We'll take your money. We'll give you a place in the thing. But you are going to need X, Y, and Z, to meaningfully participate. And if you can't, show evidence of that. I mean, maybe we're just not going to let you in.
The pedagogy or the andragogy that gets provided by the educators. Right. That's the other important key, because to just hop back to the woodworking thing, I follow about 40 different YouTube woodworkers. Right. And I've tried to follow and this one's OK and that one's OK. And then I found this one guy. His name is Rex Kruger and he's amazing. And it took me 6 months to figure out why he was amazing. It was because he was a high school English teacher. And he's down in the States, and he ended up making more money working as a woodworker than he did as a teacher. So he's turning into this full-time thing, but he talks like an educator.
The way K-12 people get paid in the United States is despicable. I cannot say how half-assed it is the way that they may as well just say it. It's like, we don't value public education even a bit, and you're lucky we hire you for anything. Anyway, complete side rant there.
So part of ed tech and lifelong learning is it can't just be the tech. There has to be the pedagogy. Because if you have ever sat, I don't know if you ever sat and listened to some 65, 70 year old guy that is like the world expert on whatever this tool is. Normally they're just boring and it's painful, but you have somebody with a bit less skill, but knows how to teach and knows how to present it in a pedagogically appropriate way. And then you're laughing, right? If they know how to teach, it helps so much. And that's what we've got right now. It's like, because when you said your kids go to find the appropriate website, which one is that? That's part of the digital literacy that, especially a lot of the older people, right? But how do we know it's online? It must be the real thing, right? This must be a good one, because when I Googled it, this is what came up. It's where is that component? Because this is a huge industry now. They're talking about... there's been an explosion in institutions, post-secondary institutions catering to lifelong learners that have retired and they're moving into whatever else in the world they're trying to learn. And it's like, if there's no pedagogy there, they lose that business. They'll go someplace better. So what are we doing?
You've got a lot of good points and a lot of good questions there. And I think, it really gives us some...
Isn't that your job to answer all those? I thought you were going to answer all those.
I could try. It won't sound particularly linear or effective, but I think you're actually speaking really strongly to some of the points that you made in your notes. Just one thing I sort of made. I actually do have a list of, topics that I kind of wanted to... make sure that I speak to you, whether in the notes or in the podcast. I'll just mention it now because we, you know, I think we've opened up a fair bit for episode three. I just would like to give out a shout out for lifelong learning to continuing education departments across Canada. They do a lot of amazing work. There's a lot of creativity that comes from those departments. And actually, again, just in terms of the community inquiry, pardon me, that I sort of referred to and that I've done my thesis work on, Garrison, Dr. Randy Garrison, again, one of the main proponents and practitioners and theoreticians of COI. I mean, he worked at a continuing ed department. Can't remember the institution, whether it was Red River College or University of Alberta, but he was working in a continuing ed department while model was in its early peer-reviewed stages. He was collaborating with various folks, and a lot of, I believe, respondents to the surveys and so forth that went into even coming up with that model, which is now widely cited and used, it was from and of, I believe, a lot of it was from the continuing ed world, again, doing lifelong learning for quite some time, right? So, again, I just wanted to kind of throw that out there because that I felt was relevant to our discussion today, bud.
And I kick myself because 5 years ago, I had a chance. I went to a really cruddy meeting, a meeting that ended up being miserable for me. And instead, if I had not gone to that meeting, I had a chance to go to a continuing ed session at NAIT on blacksmithing. And I could have spent 3 days learning how to be a blacksmith. And I really want to know how to be a blacksmith. I think that'd be fantastic.
Think of all the extra stuff you would learn. You would have to know to come out as a certified blacksmith. I mean, you'd have to know about, you know, safety procedures. You'd have to know about metallurgy to a high degree, right? You'd have to know a lot of, physics, in order to kind of do what you is necessary there. I'm picturing a sword being hammered out here. I'm picturing like a friggin' two-handed, whatever, D&D.
Yep, you're
dragon slaying, monster orc slashing, Game of Thrones, whatever. Yeah.
Sometimes I think I want a one-handed sword because then I can hold it with two hands and it's not nearly as heavy. Like those other ones are like 15 or 20 pounds, and that's just too much.
Dude, you're taking this into some new waters here, my friend.
I played D&D a lot growing up, a lot.
I played it about this much, and I enjoyed it a lot. So we got overlap. We got more of Venn diagrams coming up here, or we got Venn diagram that's becoming more multifaceted. Doug, I'm feeling like we've really opened up a lot on this topic, and I'm also mindful of time, and I don't want to make this sound perfunctory at all. My kids' kickoff is in about 15 minutes here.
Oh, yeah.
So
I'm coming back to this topic later on, though. We're going to talk about this more.
Well, I'm glad that we are, because I think this is definitely something where we can go part one, part two, and quite a lot more. I think we've done a good job today of sort of raising, the importance of lifelong learning in general. And I think that in itself is significant, particularly given the tech, which is increasingly used to deliver that. And we have
the tech can be positive, can be a positive impact or a negative impact. So it depends, and we'll explore that at a later date.
And a lot of that comes too from Doug's, very important, I think, focus on, again, naming things appropriately, speaking to things respectfully, setting a climate in which learning can successfully take place, which, again, if you want to talk about affecting how technology is going to, work, having a positive, respectful learning environment, I think, is key. So again, thanks for getting us on that tip today, Doug.
Right on. And I look forward to talking to you again.
Definitely, man. Take care.
You too. Have a great one.